Hello, welcome to a new type of episode on the Q Dropped podcast. As you know, every second week we post an interview with somebody who's lost a loved one down the QAnon rabbit hole. Well, starting this week, we're going to be posting a different type of episode on our off weeks. In these episodes, you're going to hear from experts in all different types of fields that relate to QAnon and they relate to the relationships that we're having with our Qs. I am so excited that the first interview features Mick West, who is the author of Escaping the Rabbit Hole, How to Debunk Conspiracy Theories Using Facts, Logic, and Respect. And when I first realized that my parents went down the QAnon rabbit hole, this is the first book that I ended up reading. I tend to kind of consume a lot of content when I'm going through something like that. And I reached for this book and I read it and it was very, very helpful. And so afterwards, I emailed Mick asking for, in a long shot, I asked for some personalized advice for my specific situation. And to my surprise, he actually responded and gave me advice for my situation. And I was forever grateful for that. And when I reached out for this interview, he told me he has a second edition of his book coming out with a whole chapter on QAnon. So I thought this is just the perfect fit. So I am so excited to bring this conversation with Mick West to you. If you are listening to this on an audio platform, just know that you can actually watch the full video of my conversation with Mick West on our YouTube channel. Of course, the link to that is going to be in our show notes. You'll also be able to see an ad-free version of this video on Patreon. And I'll also link to Mick's book in the show notes because it was awesome. And I think everybody should read it, especially if you are a listener of this podcast. Please rate and review our podcast so we can reach more people out there who might need to hear what we're talking about, and enjoy my chat with Mick. Okay, so welcome to the Q Dropped podcast, Mick West. This is our first episode where we actually have brought on an expert to talk about how to talk to people, how to deal with your relationships and stuff like that with people down any kind of conspiracy rabbit hole. So I'm really excited about that. You are, of course, the author of Escaping the Rabbit Hole, which our listeners can purchase at the link in our show notes. Do you want to tell us a little bit about yourself, Nick?
Sure, yeah. I'm actually a retired video game programmer. So my background is in like software engineering and things like that. But I've always had an interest in kind of exploring alternative ideas, for want of a better word. I did a lot of reading of, let's say, science fiction and things like that when I was young, and that kind of translated to an interest in science in general. And then I kind of got interested in kind of conspiracy theories, because there's a lot of like, you know, scientific claims in those. I started out with the chemtrails conspiracy theory. You know, that's kind of like a misunderstanding of the science behind contrails. So I was kind of wading in there, trying to explain that to people. And I learned a lot in that process. And over the years, I've done more and more of similar things, you know, branching out into different topics like 9/11 conspiracy theories, and more recently things like QAnon and UFOs, which have been in the news quite a lot recently. Yeah, I wrote the book a few years ago. There's actually a new edition coming out in June the 20th. So people might want to wait for that edition. But it was basically trying to encapsulate everything I'd learned from talking to a lot of people, you know, a wide variety of conspiracy theories. And here we are now.
Yeah, that's how I found you, actually. It was my parents who went down the QAnon rabbit hole, and that was devastating. And I immediately, like, that the way that I deal with that kind of stuff is I immediately find books to read about it. And your book popped right up and I read it and it was very helpful. And we did actually get through to my parents enough to get them vaccinated. They still believe in the conspiracy theories, but we have like a an understanding, you know, like we have boundaries that we don't cross. And so we can still have a relationship. And a lot of the things that you said in your book helped with us kind of establishing that.
Yeah, and that's kind of like, in a way, the first goal that anyone should shoot for when they're trying to, you know, work through this process. Initially it starts out, it's very, very difficult. You know, when you have a relationship with somebody and they often don't tell you these things. They don't tell you the gradual increase in belief, and it can kind of come all at once when they suddenly drop they listened to Alex Jones or whatever, and they believe in these various conspiracy theories. You know, they usually have a different specific channel that they get their information from, but it can be quite a shock, and so it throws you off kilter, and I think it can be very difficult to quickly establish a new normal. But it's really vital to do that, because for a start, you don't want to lose the relationship with that person, especially if they're very close to you, like your parents, or even your spouse. Lots of people have that experience. So you want to get that back if possible, and then try to build constructively upon that relationship.
Mm-hmm. What would you say is the biggest mistake that people make when dealing with somebody who's down any kind of rabbit hole?
Well, I think there's probably two biggest ones. And the first one is getting angry. Now, getting angry is very understandable. And it's not something you have a lot of control over, because it's a shock. It's almost like this person has betrayed you because you thought that you knew them, and it turns out that you didn't. So getting angry is an understandable reaction, but it can be problematic. It kind of depends, how angry you get, I guess, and how long it lasts. A little bit of initial anger is perhaps okay, but you really want to get back to establishing the communication, and you can't do that from a place of anger and even dislike or hatred. And then I think the other mistake that people make is they start trying to debunk the other person. Like, they start trying to figure out, what did this person say? What is wrong? And then I just explain to them why they're wrong. And that really doesn't work if you start out doing that, because it's very difficult for someone to listen to you, because they feel like they know all the answers and they feel like you know nothing. So you've got this disconnect here. They really think that you don't understand what's going on. So if you start jumping in there and saying, well, look at this AP article that debunks your claims about the white rabbit or whatever the particular claim is, they're just going to scoff at you because they feel like they know so much more about the subject than you do. And it's quite possible that they do. They've spent possibly weeks or months kind of getting deeper and deeper down the rabbit hole, consuming all this content. So in some ways they become experts, but they're experts in what we call a crippled epistemology, like a crippled knowledge system, where you're only getting your knowledge from one very skewed source. But from their perspective, it seems like they know it all and you don't, and really you should be explaining it to them. So then you come in and you give you your little things, here's an article from Snopes, and they're just going to laugh at you. So you've got to think of that as being a later stage after establishing effective communication, which means really getting to understand them and getting them to understand you.
Yeah, those two mistakes I definitely made.
It's understandable.
Well, I was raised, my parents were both very left-wing, very just the last people on earth you would expect to go down this QAnon rabbit hole. So it was very upsetting to both my brother and I. I've kind of come to terms with it. My brother's still very angry, but we spent a good 2 months trying to debunk everything that they said, and it just doesn't work. Because it's not necessarily, for some of them at least, it's not necessarily that they're rationally attached to these ideas. It's more emotional. And so when you come at them with a rational argument, it's not going to work. That's what I've found anyway.
Yeah, that's very true. A lot of the time, people, they essentially feel that their theory must be true because it resonates with them. Someone tells you these things, like the government is being lying to you, and you know, children are being attacked, and we have to save the children. These things, the very kind of fundamental beliefs that people have. You know, we all obviously believe that we should protect children, and a lot of people have varying levels of distrust of the government. I mean, everyone should have a healthy distrust of the government, because, you know, obviously politicians don't always have our best interests at heart. But some people take it so far that they automatically believe anything that suggests the government is lying to you. So someone just has to say, you know, the government is lying to you about these child abduction rings, say, and they'll believe it, because, oh, that's the type of thing the government would do. People in power would do, the cabal would do that, because, you know, they're evil people. And this guy seems to have some evidence, you know, they're looking at whatever video it is. And so they're going to end up believing that. So it's kind of very easy for them to kind of slip in to that mode of belief.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think also with, especially with older people, like my parents are both retired and they're empty nesters, you know, and it's like the first time in their lives where they really haven't had anything to do. And I feel like that has, it's kind of given them something in their lives, yeah. You know, it's filled a void.
Yeah, I see that a lot with people who kind of tell me their story. A good chunk of people who fall down some kind of rabbit hole like this do it because they have a lot of spare time. A lot of people, it's, you know, older people especially, because they've retired, but also people who just lost their job during COVID. You know, a lot of people, you know, lost their job sometimes just temporarily. And so they spend a lot of time at home, and during lockdown, of course, like they couldn't even go out. So they're just kind of stuck looking for things to do on the internet. A lot of people live alone as well. They don't have other people to talk to. So they end up getting sucked into these things just because they have that spare time. If people were interacting with other people, you know, going to the office or going to whatever work they do, you know, talking to people, it wouldn't necessarily be so easy for that to happen. But you definitely see that a lot. And also some people with jobs, certain types of jobs that are kind of solitary, they end up consuming a certain type of content. Like, say, for example, long-distance truck drivers end up listening to, say, shortwave radio or something on Sirius or something like that, which has a certain, you know, bias. And just because that's the only thing they get exposed to, and they do it over such a long period of time, they consume so much of it. Once they get hooked on it, they keep listening to more and more. They eventually just get kind of sucked in, and they might not even realize it. There was a documentary film a few years ago called The Brainwashing of My Dad, which is about a woman whose father started listening to conservative talk radio. And previously, he was this very kind of progressive guy. Kind of dismiss these types of things. But for some reason, he started listening to conservative talk radio, kind of the more extreme right side of things. And he started repeating these conservative talking points, like, you know, immigrants are responsible for all the crime, and yeah, just the type of things that, you know, we should give tax cuts to the rich, and people shouldn't expect charity. You know, the type of things that he was basically the opposite of the way he was thinking before. And she described it as him being brainwashed, because he didn't think like that before, but somehow just from this exposure. And what she did was she kind of, I think she removed his radio or tuned his radio onto NPR or something like that. And it kind of worked the opposite way. Because he became exposed to a more balanced set of sources, he started to understand some of the arguments and counter arguments rather than just being exposed to one thing. And this is kind of, you know, it's not something everyone can do. We can't sneak in and change our parents' TV channels. You know, they'll figure out what you're doing with most people. But it's kind of a goal that you want to work towards, which is exposing them to other information sources, so they're not just simply, you know, getting everything from one source.
Yeah, I it's crossed my mind and my brother's mind that we, you know, somehow get into their house and, like, you know, block certain websites on their modem and stuff like that. But of course, that's just a lot of work. And, you know, new websites pop up all the time. So it just would be impossible. But
yeah, it's also, it would come with risks as well, because, you know, if they discovered you were doing that, that's a huge kind of a trust violation. And you wouldn't want to do that. You want to, if possible, do it organically, like somehow get them to gradually start reading things or consuming content that is a little bit broader, which perhaps you can do by doing it together or just recommending things or saying like, yeah, if you watch this, I'll watch, you know, whatever you sent me. So do a little quid pro quo there, and that can work, but you know, you just need to kind of get them exposed to this other information. It's very important that people are not just stuck in a kind of a walled garden where they just end up spiraling deeper and deeper into a rabbit hole. You've got to have some kind of foothold with reality. And often that can be just talking to you. But it can also be like, you know, if you recommend something to them to read, like, for example, like recommending an article about someone who used to be in QAnon. And, you know, they might find it interesting because they are in QAnon. It doesn't necessarily mean they will believe it, but being exposed to it helps, even though it doesn't initially seem that way.
Yeah, my parents were, when we finally did get them vaccinated, it was after they watched The Social Dilemma, which is a documentary on Netflix about social media algorithms and how they basically keep you in an echo chamber. And, I think that kind of opened their minds a little bit. Like I said, they're still down that rabbit hole, but they did get vaccinated, which is a huge thing for somebody in QAnon. So that helped a little bit.
Yeah, I think like The Social Dilemma is probably a very good thing to get people to watch, because it kind of feeds into, you know, their beliefs in a way, because it's a little bit like, you know, these big corporations are conspiring to brainwash you. And, you know, that's the type of thing that people who have a natural distrust of authority you'll kind of resonate with them. So, oh yeah, well, of course they're doing that. But when they start thinking about how might I have been brainwashed by various other people on social media, then it can be a kind of almost like a neutral way of bringing up the topic of undue influence from certain media outlets.
Yeah, that was exactly their response to it. It was like, oh my gosh, I can't believe they've been conspiring against us. Like, it's like it was almost like a new conspiracy theory for them to believe in. But
fight fire with fire.
Yeah, yeah. It was a good documentary too. It was very eye-opening for me as well. So my parents, or my mom, kind of got sucked into it through the online wellness community. Alternative medicine, natural remedies, and stuff like that. What are some of the major kind of funnels to QAnon that you've noticed?
Well, that's definitely one of them. Online wellness. I think there's something about wellness that a certain segment of the wellness community becomes kind of overly concerned with health. Now, if you look at someone like Alex Jones, like a big conspiracy theorist, he made all his money from supplements, basically health supplements. So he was getting people, he was not just getting people concerned about their health, but the type of person who went into that type of conspiracy was perhaps a bit more concerned about their health, a little bit more kind of concerned with outside influences in affecting their body in some ways. I've seen this with the chemtrail community. A lot of people view like chemtrails as being like the government spraying toxins on us. So the person who is like more concerned with their health would naturally be more prone to believing in the chemtrails. And of course, with like the wellness community, you have this huge intersection with alternative medicine. So people who already believe in something that is kind of outside of the mainstream of science, you know, a lot of this is not very far outside, like herbal medicine. Some of it is very far outside, like homeopathic medicine doesn't really have any scientific basis. But then you get even more esoteric things, like people who sit under little pyramids, or people who paint their walls with radiation blocking paint. These are all kind of extensions of the same basic concern that people have for their health, but they're leading into essentially pseudoscience. And pseudoscience has to reject mainstream science. So since you've got that rejection of mainstream science, you've also got the rejection of basically the authority structure that we have in the country, because mainstream science essentially is what the government goes by. So there's this very distinct funnel from the wellness community into people with some degree of perhaps hypochondria into conspiracy theories, because conspiracy theories, like I said, Alex Jones made hundreds of millions of dollars selling health supplements. He didn't make it from his YouTube channel. He made it from the commercials for, super thyroid blocker or whatever it was that he had in the background. So it's a distinct thing.
Yeah, my mom, and I think with other people too, I think it's about control. And I think that's one of the things that kind of came into play when the pandemic happened, because for my mom, she's always been obsessed with health and living as long as possible and looking young. And like, she lives her life with this intense fear of death and tries to control that, And so when something like a virus comes along, it's a lot easier for people, I think, like my mom, to accept that a human made it, because humans can be overcome. Humans can be defeated. We can fight against humans, but it's harder to accept that we're just at the mercy of nature and that at any moment some virus could come and completely wipe us out. So I think for my mom and a lot of people like it, it's got a lot to do with control and this idea that they can have a say in when they die.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think control in a broader sense too. Like when I was talking to a lot of the 9/11 conspiracy theorists, a lot of them really kind of disliked the idea that a few terrorists from Afghanistan and Saudi Arabia could basically just hijack some planes, fly them into buildings and kill thousands of people. They thought that was highly improbable. And so they thought there had to be a broader conspiracy behind it, which kind of led to various levels of conspiracy, one of which was just basically that the government must have arranged to help these terrorists do this. And then people even found that to be too ludicrous, because how could something like planes flying into buildings create this huge reaction? So they don't like this small effect having a disproportionate result. So then they came up with the next conspiracy theory, which was that explosives were planted in the buildings, lots and lots, hundreds of tons of explosives, and it was just timed to go off after the planes hit the buildings. So you get these more extreme conspiracy theories, which just kind of resonate better with them, because now they've got this very powerful group of people who did this really complicated thing to cause this horrible result. And like you say, it's the same thing with coronavirus. They want to explain why has the world been turned upside down. Could it be just like some bat bit somebody, or somebody ate a bat at some point and then it's spread around? Or could it be this big conspiracy? And then again, you get lots of levels. It could be just like the Chinese let this thing out by accident and are covering it up, or the Chinese did it deliberately, or the Americans did it deliberately, or it's some kind of vector for something else and it's going to be activated by 5G radiation. And kind of the bigger the conspiracy theory gets, for some people, the better it is, because it explains things so much better. If you think like 5G radiation is bad, that's explaining why you're having headaches. There's a 5G tower down the street, so it justifies your concerns. If you're having headaches and it's just a mystery why you're having headaches, that's very dissatisfying. But if you can say the government is irradiating me, trying to activate the vaccine chips that they've implanted in me, that's kind of an exciting theory about the world that seems to make sense to you, and it feels better, and that's why people get sucked into it.
For sure, it definitely is tied into all of that control. And I think also another thing that kind of motivates people is feeling like I've heard this from a lot of the people that we've interviewed, that their QAnon loved one loves the feeling of being smarter than everybody else or having access to secret knowledge.
That's the thing. I think there's a few markers for conspiracy theories, and there's a few studies that have been done as to the personality types and various things that you can measure in people about their personality and their psychology, and how it correlates with conspiracy ideation. And one of those is called the need for uniqueness. And it's basically, you know, feeling special, the desire to feel special. And they can measure this in people. But, you know, the way they measure it is fairly, fairly simple. Basically, they have a multiple choice questionnaire, and it's got like 40 questions on it. And if you score higher than a certain point, you're more needy for uniqueness. But I think the actual correlation between that marker and whether someone becomes a conspiracy theory isn't that big. It's like 5% or something like that, 5% more than the general population. So it doesn't really have a huge impact, but it's definitely there. It's measurable. But lots of people with just perfectly normal needs for uniqueness get sucked into conspiracy theories. And what happens is they think they become unique and then they enjoy it. So you kind of fall into this thing, like if someone told you that you are special, then you might enjoy it. And the average person might. I like feeling unique. I mean, I like it when people like my videos on YouTube and things like that. It's, you know, I like it when people tell me they like my book. Everyone likes to feel special. Everyone likes to feel unique. And so when someone falls into a situation that makes them feel unique, it's a fairly natural thing. And I'm kind of laboring this point because I think it's important not to pathologize conspiracy theory. You don't want to view it just as a mental illness. There's some components of mental illness which contribute to that. But there's also lots of people who are conspiracy theorists who are perfectly normal. They just have this mixed up set of beliefs that they've arrived at because they've consumed the wrong information. And I think you do better in conversation with people if you assume that they are essentially sane and they've just been misled, rather than starting out thinking that they are some kind of crazy person. If they're a crazy person, I mean, what are you going to do? You're not a psychologist. You're not going to be able to, help them. You're not going to give them antipsychotic medication. And probably they're not. Probably they're not crazy people. The things they are saying sound crazy, but they've been sucked into this belief system, which is a crazy belief system. But internally to them, they're being perfectly sane because based on what they know, it all makes sense.
Yeah, I agree. I've heard a lot of people refer to it as mental illness or that the believers are crazy or whatever. And I don't think that that's very helpful because some people leave. Some people get out of it and they change their minds or they're exposed to new information and they're not down this rabbit hole anymore. And with QAnon, it's exceedingly rare in my experience speaking with everybody, but it still happens. We've spoken to one person who used to be in QAnon. And it's not like they just stopped being crazy. You know, it's just new information, essentially, is what did it.
Yeah, exactly. And they remain essentially the same type of person, but now they've got this broader set of information from which to draw on. And it might make them a bit more level-headed because they now kind of recognize that they were fooled in the past, and so they're perhaps a little bit more skeptical of things, which is kind of is changing your brain chemistry in a way, is that you tend to be a bit more less immediately accepting of things. But yeah, people do get out, like you say, like it seems rare, but I think a lot of people who get out of conspiracy theories kind of do it quietly. A lot of people who had this belief in something extreme like that, they don't want to talk about it when they get out of it. It's embarrassing, or it just becomes less important to them, or they kind of come out of it gradually. Like your parents had a stronger belief in the conspiracy theory, but now a bit somewhat less so, but obviously they're still believing in conspiracies. And that happens a lot. Sometimes you just, a victory in talking to somebody can just be to get them to believe a less extreme version of a conspiracy theory. You know, little steps, like with the 9/11 things, there's lots of people gave up the controlled demolition theory. Like, a lot of people gave up the idea that explosives were planted because they looked into it and, you know, they talked to people. Originally, they were super hardcore, like this, perhaps spent like 10 years or so believing this theory. But, you know, they grow and they listen to things and other people talk to them. And then they kind of step down to the next level. And now they're just people who believe that George Bush had foreknowledge of the things and the Saudis were involved in the money side of it. And, you know, they believe a different conspiracy theory, but one that's less extreme. And that's good, because the less extreme a conspiracy theory someone believes in, you know, the better off they are mentally, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. It's the extreme nature of some of the QAnon beliefs that are the most worrying thing, I think, for most of the people like me who have somebody who's down that rabbit hole that they love. It's the extremeness of it all that's very unsettling. Like, my mom's always been an adherent to alternative medicine, holistic medicine, all of this stuff. And that was never an issue for us. You know, we would, every once in a while, we had to convince her to go to the doctor for certain things or whatever. But outside of that, it was harmless. You know, she'd show up with oil of oregano when one of us had a cold. That's really it. We could deal with that. But now QAnon is, I mean, QAnon means something different for, I think, every single person who believes in these conspiracy theories. But it's definitely way more extreme than that. And it's way more concerning. And it has resulted in violence in quite a few cases. So,
yeah. Well, the beliefs are much more extreme. I mean, the alternative medicine as a conspiracy theory is just kind of believing that, you know, Big Pharma is pushing their products over natural products. And that's kind of the extent of the theory, really. But with, you know, QAnon, as you know, is like really extreme stuff, like the idea of adrenochrome farming type things, like, you know, kidnapping, you know, thousands and thousands of children for things like that. Like, you know, global rings of child smuggling. You know, these at the high levels of government, these are pretty extreme theories, like with, you know, direct consequences. If you believe some of the numbers of the number of children that have been abducted, it's like something like 1 in 5 children are going to be abducted by QAnon over the deep state over their lifetimes. It can be, you know, it was something that creates a lot of fear if you believe that type of thing is going on. And obviously it's going to create this huge distrust of the government, which is going to lead to things like the January the 6th attacks, because people believe that there is this deep state conspiracy, and they believe it to be really horrible. It's not just like a bunch of, you know, guys trying to make money by, you know, promoting war and selling arms, which is kind of an old-fashioned conspiracy theory, which is probably partly true. It's this horrible, kind of satanic, sick, this conspiracy that, you know, if it was true, everyone should be fighting against it. And so they think that what they do is completely justified. Whereas like health issues are much, much less so generally. And I wouldn't kind of dismiss it entirely, because there certainly are issues. Like, you know, I know people who lived shorter lives because they rejected conventional medicine. You know, people with cancer who prefer a certain type of treatment, or they reject something, like, say, rejecting the steroids that you need because you've read somewhere that steroids are bad for you. But if you had the steroids, you would have lived another like 6 months to a year. But instead, you go downhill very rapidly. Like, these things are actually do happen with people. Steve Jobs, you know, perhaps lived less long than he did because he went with alternative medicine. So most of the time, it's pretty harmless for the individual. It's pretty harmless at a national scale, well, as well. But it's not without harm.
Yeah, for sure. For most of the people that I talk to, and like myself, it feels as though there's been a rise in conspiratorial thinking. And, you know, QAnon is a huge part of that. Do you know if that's factual, or are we kind of at the same level of conspiratorial thinking as we've always been?
it kind of depends how you measure it. There was a study, I think, by Joseph Uzinski, who did, I think it was an analysis of letters to the editors or something like that, and analyzing over the years how much of those were conspiratorial. And he didn't seem to see any change. But it seems fairly apparent that these things are more mainstream now. And I think that's kind of what happened. It's that the conspiratorial thinking that people always had, like a distrust of the government or a feeling that there was something more going on in the world, has become more brought to the surface. And it becomes very easy now for people to kind of pierce the veil as they see it and discover some kind of conspiracy that they can then follow. But their actual thinking might not have really changed that much. If they distrust the government, now they're just distrusting the government and they have some specific evidence, or so they think. So it's very hard to say, because these things are kind of hard to measure and they kind of ebb and flow with what's going on. Like, there's fairly benign conspiracy theory is the UFO conspiracy theory, which is the theory that the government is covering up evidence of aliens, some kind of crashed alien craft or something like that. And that basically depends on how much it's been in the news. And because there's been lots of stuff in the news recently, the amount of people that believe that theory kind of went up from about 20% to about 40% just over like 5 years or so, just because it was in the news. So I wouldn't see that as a really a rise in that particular conspiracy theory. It's just kind of a surfacing of it, and it being publicized more. And in 5 years' time, it'll probably fade away again as nothing actually happens. But yeah, it's hard to say, but it does seem like there's certainly a lot more of it going around.
Yeah, what do you think contributes to it becoming a little bit more mainstream? I know that like one of the factors is obviously the internet and the ability for all of these people to reach each other. But is there anything else that you think contributes to that?
Yeah, I think there's a couple of things. One is the internet making it easier, but also the kind of dissolution of traditional media, mainstream media, into various different outlets. Like, you used to get all of your information from TV news back in the 90s and before. Then you got some of it from the internet, or you get it from newspapers. Then you get it from the internet. And when the internet started to get popular and fast, you start to get outlets that were just internet outlets, like Huffington Post or whatever. And then you can get more niche outlets. You get these smaller outlets that are just kind of aimed at one particular audience. And the old media, like CNN, as increasingly the demographic has shifted away from the younger people more towards just older people who like to have the TV on in the background and don't really like the internet. So you've got a huge number of people who no longer get their information from mainstream media, even if it was something like Fox News. They're now going over to alternative things. This even happened within the internet revolution itself. YouTube kind of used to have a monopoly on video sharing online. But they did a lot of work to try to suppress negative and hateful content, like conspiracy theories. So it became very, very hard to find things like that on the internet. Like, if you look for chemtrails, you won't find very much other than chemtrail debunking things. You look for election denial videos, and you won't find very much of that either. And what happened is that initially worked by suppressing the spread of information, which was great. But because there's no real monopoly, you started to get other video outlets like Rumble coming in. And now people can just go to Rumble, and there's loads of content on Rumble that's all very, very conspiratorial. Very like the election was stolen, the government is spraying us with toxins. And so it's this kind of dissolution of the media from more authoritative sources, where you would have proper journalists spending a lot of time researching stories and making sure it was accurate, to media outlets that are trying to promote a particular point of view If you go on Rumble, they're trying to promote a particular point of view. Now, even Twitter is kind of getting somewhat compromised because of Elon Musk trying to promote his particular point of view. And it's a difficult thing to get around because people are going to latch onto one outlet or one set of outlets, and it's going to be very difficult to get people away from that because we've lost that more authoritative, more in-depth reporting that we used to have.
For sure. And something that I've also talked about a lot is that, you know, back when I was a kid, the news was where you got your news, the news hour at dinner time and the newspaper. And both of those outlets had very high journalistic standards. And you could more or less trust what they were saying. Sometimes they'd get things wrong, they'd issue corrections, and of course it would be on the last page in small print, but they would still issue a correction. But it was trustworthy for the most part. And then when the internet came along, it was like all these little, like anybody can start a blog, anybody can make it look like it's a news site, and it can be, any information can be posted on it, and there's no journalistic standards being enforced on all of these websites. And I think it's easier for people like of my parents' age to, when they see something that looks like a newspaper website, they just inherently trust it because they grew up with newspapers having journalistic standards, and that's what they associate with that. So I think it's definitely, you know, some of these more sinister outlets that are trying to pass themselves off as legitimate journalistic outlets. It's concerning.
I mean, there's things like that in all the conspiracy theories. And, you know, someone can just get a nice camera and sit in front of it and put a green screen behind them and put up a, you know, newsroom set stock footage and just wear a suit and tie. And it looks like a reputable outlet when it's just some guy, just some person who's just, you know, saying whatever he wants to say, but framing it as if it's mainstream news, and you put some nice graphics on screen. It's a distinct problem because, you know, like you say, older people are used to trusting things that look like that. I think we have an opportunity with younger people to teach them how to judge a source, like how reputable is this source, and, you know, can we actually verify this from other people, and, you know, who are these journalists, and what are the things that they've written, things like that. That's something I think that will be increasingly important. I mean, it's important right now, and it is something that some schools do teach, but I think it's going to be vital in the future because there's going to be so many diversity of information sources that being able to judge the quality of an information source is going to be very challenging. Perhaps it's something where artificial intelligence might come in, but that's a whole other kettle of fish in itself.
Yeah, it is. So one of the things that every single person that I've interviewed who has a QAnon loved one has said to me, and this includes my parents as well, is that these Q believers, when you are talking to them about anything or trying to challenge something that they've said, they move the goalposts, just constantly moving the goalposts. How would you suggest that somebody deals with that? Because that feels like it's impossible to get around.
It is, and it's kind of like a survival strategy in a way for people who believe in conspiracy theories. They base their beliefs on a wide range of things. You know, they've got lots and lots of evidence. If you look at, like, you know, the list of Q drops or something like that, or the Q map, it's huge. There's thousands of things on it, and they could just pick like a whole bunch of them and say that this is the evidence. And, you know, if you explain why all that is false, then they can just move on to something else because, you know, they know that it really only takes one thing to prove their conspiracy theory. If the government is doing this one thing, then it means that the evil conspiracy exists, even if a whole bunch of other stuff turned out not to be true. That's just disinformation. So kind of what you have to do, I think, is try to focus on things that will make the most difference. And the way I recommend people doing that is try to find things that your friend doesn't actually believe in. You know, what are the things, perhaps in this conspiracy theory or perhaps in this other conspiracy theory, that they don't believe to be true? You know, the reason you want to do that is that everyone draws a line at some point in the kind of the extremeness spectrum of conspiracy theories. You've got like, you know, one end things that are not particularly extreme, and then at the other end you've got things that are a lot more extreme, you know, very, very extreme things. And people will say, you know, I believe these things here, that they sound very reasonable, but at this point I don't believe anything that's over here. And I think the mistake people do is that they're debunking all this stuff that's over here in the easy section, like, you know, all the stuff that's down at the bottom that this person believes solidly. So it doesn't really do much good. And obviously, there's no point in debunking this they don't believe. But you would, if you narrow it down into that boundary, this line of demarcation between what they think as being reasonable theories and what they think of as being extreme theories, then you can find things that will make a difference. You will find things that are kind of pivot points in a way. If you can ask them, like, if you believe this particular thing here, but you don't believe something that's, you know, just a little bit further, a little bit more extreme, like, why don't you believe that and why do you believe that? Then you can contrast the two things. And, you know, just, it can just be like an interesting conversation. Like, you don't go into it setting out to debunk them on this particular point necessarily. That'd be great if that happened. But try to get them to think about why they believe one thing but not the other. You know, what is the actual difference between these two things? And so by focusing on just this very narrow band of their beliefs, it kind of saves, you know, scattering around all over the place and trying to debunk everything. And it can be very productive.
Something else that happens a lot, of course, is the grift, the scams that come along with QAnon, that, you know, people who believe these conspiracy theories often get taken advantage of monetarily. My parents, we don't know what they did with a bunch of money that they had before. It just is gone. And then we had a guest on recently. She was married to this man for 10 years, and he was just slowly going deeper and deeper into this rabbit hole during their whole marriage. And at the end, he was spending their money on Iraqi dinar and silver bars, and they couldn't afford, or he wasn't letting her buy a bed for her adult special needs daughter, stuff like that. So when it's something more severe, like that's affecting their finances, and it's kind of a dire situation, what are your recommendations in that situation?
Well, I think in a way that's, you know, it's obviously a bad situation, but it's also something of an opportunity because it gives you something to talk about that's very tangible, like money. Like if you're in a relationship, you know, like you're married, or you're in some kind of relationship where you share the finances, that should remain. Even if one of you believes a certain way, that doesn't mean that they can spend all of your money. They can't spend your money. So it can kind of, in a way, be like a negotiating point where you can kind of try to come to some kind of shared understanding about the money. And once you've got that kind of, you know, little bit of shared understanding, that can sometimes be helpful in moving forward. You get a situation. But you know, in terms of it, how do you deal with like the broader situation if someone's taking all of your money and spending it all on nonsense? I mean, this is a very difficult thing because you don't really have the luxury of time. You know, a big part of like helping people out of the conspiracy theory is giving it time. So that's just kind of a situation where you might have to consider, you know, more drastic things like legal action or separation even. It's, you know, you've got to look after yourself, and you can't just like say, oh, I'll just let my money be frittered away because maybe things will improve in the future, because they may well not improve in the future. So it's a very serious situation that needs to be addressed seriously and not just left alone.
Yeah, our guest ended up divorcing him. So she dealt with it. She's much happier now, too, by the way.
Yeah, well, it's that often happens.
Yeah, he was also buying these things called Tesla biohealers. Have you heard of these? They're not the Elon's company. It's this other company. It's like Tesla Medicine or something like that. And they're based out of an old motel, and they sell these giant cans that they say they're like the mini med beds. And I think somebody opened one and it was just filled with cement or something like that, but they sell for like $600 a piece, and then you can get the bigger ones for 20 grand. He was buying those. So
that's sad. Yeah. Cause I mean, that kind of ties into the whole thing we were talking about earlier with the health things, and people do end up, when they believe certain types of alternative science, they will end up buying things like that. And this is what drives a lot of this stuff. Like, you know, I came back to Alex Jones a couple of times because he made so much money doing it. But there's a lot of people who make money from very alternative medicine, like people who are EMF blockers and things like that, things like the quantum patches that you can put on you to kind of like remove the toxins in your blood. These are things that some of the people who are selling them actually believe them. You know, perhaps they got them from someone else. So you go to these trade shows where you see these things, and you see someone with this, you know, this foot bath that takes toxins out of your feet. Even though it's complete nonsense, it's just, you know, it's a chemical reaction. Like, the people selling it actually believe it. And to a degree, that happens within the community. So it's you can't always assume someone's a grifter, although, you know, ultimately a lot of people are, but some people do actually believe it, which is kind of weird.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, they do. We've come across a few of those people with my mom. My mom went down the Mike Adams, the health ranger.
Oh,
have you heard of
yes.
him?
Oh, yeah, he's terrible. Yeah.
Yeah, he's pretty awful. You explain in your book what to do when somebody calls you a shill, and that is something that happens to, I think, every single person who has a Q believer in their life at one point or another gets called a shill. What should people do in that situation?
Well, what I recommend and what I do myself is basically like be totally honest and try to, you know, basically if they're calling you a shill, that means that they don't understand where you're coming from. So it means you have to explain yourself to them. And you know, that kind of seemed a bit counterintuitive when you're dealing with the conspiracy theorists, because it's like they're the one who've got these crazy ideas, and so, you know, why have I got to spend all this time explaining, you know, my philosophy and everything? But if they don't understand where you're coming from, them, it can be very easy for them to project some kind of idea, like, you know, you being a shill on them, or you being like brainwashed by the government. So the more they understand about the way you think, the easier it's going to be for you to communicate things to them that will ultimately change the way they think. So I tell people all about my background, you know, my history. People suspect I'm actually being employed by the CIA or something like that to try to debunk conspiracy theories. And they say, well, how do you get your money? So I explain that, you know, I'm a retired video game programmer. I made the Tony Hawk's Pro Skater video game like back in the day. And so I was able to retire fairly early. And that's, you know, how I made my money, and that's how I'm retired. And then I talk about my childhood and like how I really liked science fiction, and I got into science, just like I was saying earlier. And the more you understand of a person, you know, you can relate to them. And then the more you understand them, the easier it is for you to understand them, because you can ask questions and they will understand what the context of the question is, because they now know you a little better. So, you know, being very honest about yourself and your beliefs, and being very open, and that extends to some degree to your beliefs about them. Now, you don't want to go out and say, I think you're completely insane. You know, that's kind of the last thing you want to say to people. But you can tell them, I think you're wrong. You know, I think that these beliefs that you have are not based upon good evidence. And I think a lot of the people involved in this this endeavor are trying to fool you deliberately. You can explain these things quite straightforwardly without getting super angry, and hopefully without them getting super angry at you. But they need to know where you're coming from. They need to know what your actual beliefs are, so that you can have this productive discussion.
Yeah, that's good advice. That makes sense, because it kind of humanizes you too. Like,
yeah,
when they can understand your motivations and where you're coming from.
Yeah, and also, like, another thing that humanizes you is listening to them. Like, a lot of people who have a weird belief, like a conspiracy belief, they'll kind of start out at a run. They'll be trying to explain everything, and they're anticipating everything, objections you bring, and then they're switching things around very, very, very rapidly. And part of that is that they're used to not being believed. They're used to people disregarding their theories and thinking their theories are silly. I mean, they know. You know, QAnon people know that most of the mainstream sheeple think that their theories are ridiculous. So if you actually take the time to listen to them, to listen to what they're saying, and ask good questions of them, that will build a lot of rapport as well.
Yeah, that's good advice. See, for me, I have very little patience for listening to some of these things. Yeah. Do you have any advice for people? Because I know there's a few people who I've interviewed too. It's just like, it's so exhausting. It really is exhausting to listen to that stuff over and over again. Especially when it's somebody who's so important in your life.
Yeah.
Do you have any advice for people who suffer from that?
Well, my advice there would be that if it is getting exhausting, then stop. Like, stop for a while. You don't want to... Yeah, let that exhaustion lead to frustration, and that frustration lead to anger, and that anger leads to some kind of conflict. You think of it as you're making little progress. You talk to them. You hit a wall after 10 minutes, perhaps, maybe longer. And then there's no point like continuing after that. You can move on to something else. And you can establish kind of a norm of conversation. That you don't like actually talking about these things with them. You find it distressing, and you find it difficult to talk about these things. And if that kind of becomes the norm, people will accept it eventually. And you can have these short conversations. Say, I don't mind talking to you about this for like 10 minutes a day, but that's my limit. That's something you could set as a ground rule. And if you set that, what are they going to do? Like, maybe they want to talk to you longer, but you've made the decision. You can extend that later if things become more productive and if you become more used to it. But don't give in to this fatigue and frustration and anger, because that's not going to help. Move away if that's happening.
Yeah, for me, it was when we first, like I told you before, we tried to debunk everything that my mom was saying, and it went on for like a couple of months. It was all an email because at the time we were arguing about the vaccines and COVID was spreading and we didn't want to get together. So it was all an email, and I was just at the end of that, I was just exhausted. And I was like, I can't do this again. I can't involve myself in this again. So that's when I just drew the boundary and I said, I don't want to hear about this stuff. And if you're going to talk about it around me or my kids, we're not going to hang out with you. And they've respected that for the most part. So it's kind of gotten us back to a place where, we can sit down, we can talk about what's going on in town or the weather, or as long as it's real clouds. It's funny, we interviewed somebody yesterday who said that her mom was traveling in Mexico and she'd been drinking a little bit, and she looked up and she's like, oh, it's so nice to see real clouds.
Yeah, no, it's a surprisingly popular theory, that the weather is being controlled with chemtrails.
Yeah, yeah. We have a lot of younger people as well who we've interviewed who still live with their parents, and they're like their QAnon parents, and have found themselves in precarious situations because of it. Like I think it was last week, we interviewed a man who he's in college now, but as he was growing up, his dad's belief that the whole medical industry was corrupt stopped him from getting his child much needed medical attention, because he suffered from severe scoliosis and a bunch of different ailments that made him disabled. And in a situation like that, when you're a minor and that's your guardian, what do you suggest somebody does?
Gosh, I mean, that's not something I've really had very much experience with. So I would kind of hesitate to give advice. But you know, if possible, like you want to try to establish some kind of you know, non-conflict based norm. But if that involves, you know, you being denied medical care, then you're probably going to have to seek some kind of outside help. And I don't really know what type of resources there are for minors, but we know that, you know, people, minors can appeal to courts at an extreme and they can become emancipated from their parents, essentially divorce their parents. But, you know, it's not really my area of expertise. I would, you know, hope that most people in that situation wouldn't be in such dire straits and that they rely upon their parents for medical care. And they can just kind of get through it until they become of age and they can leave or they, you know, are able to, you know, make their own living. But it's a tricky situation. But, you know, something you said earlier reminded me of kind of a weird thing that exists already, which is many religious people, like say some Catholics and other people, believe that if someone, you know, isn't baptized or hasn't, you know, had the right sacraments or whatever, then they will go to hell. And they actually believe this. And so they're surrounded by people that they believe are actually going to go and burn in the fires of hell forever. And these could be like, you know, friends and relatives that we know and vice versa. But somehow we all manage to still get along. Like there's this really weird belief that a certain segment of society has is that all the other people in the society are going to go to hell and they are going to go to heaven. And yet whilst we're here on earth, it never really comes up in conversation because, you know, they know that the non-believers think it's kind of ridiculous, and the Catholics or whoever think, you know, they're probably not going to be able to change their minds, so, you know, why bother trying? But it's what I'm saying is it's kind of not without precedence that such a weird belief can kind of coexist with reality. So just because someone believes in QAnon, it doesn't mean you can't have a good relationship with them.
That's a really good point. I hadn't thought of that. What's the strangest conspiracy theory that you've come across?
Oh, gosh. I think some of the alternative history ones are strange because they're so out there. There's one called the Mud Flood, which is this belief that there was a giant flood not that long ago, like 100 years ago, that kind of covered the whole world in water. And you can see it in the buildings because the buildings have these kind of high water marks where they used to, you know, be a bit lower. And they think that this flood was covered up. It was this giant conspiracy. And then there's lots of other different versions of that. There's alternative civilizations that supposedly existed. And then that ties into modern conspiracy theories like QAnon. They will have some variants of that, like alternative civilizations where a certain tribe of Jewish people ruled Europe, but has been erased from the history books. You know, this idea that all the books in the world could somehow be, you know, rewritten or written in a certain way that hides history. It's just so kind of beyond comprehension. It reminds me of the chemtrail thing that is contradicted by every single book on clouds that explains it. And then you tell somebody that and they say, oh, well, they must have started this conspiracy back in the 1920s when the first books on clouds were mentioning contrails. It doesn't make any sense. And of course you get things like flat earth, which is just simply obviously wrong. And it's, you know, how do you believe that? You know, things like a lot of the QAnon beliefs are obviously wrong as well, but you know, at least they are things that are hidden, which you could say possibly could be happening in the shadows, but flat earth, the earth isn't flat. It kind of looks flat though when you're on a plane, but it's, I've seen people who, yeah, I saw an interview with a Q lady who was saying, like, you know, if the government can do these things, like, you know, abducting children, yeah, perhaps, you know, they could be doing other things like covering up flat Earth. So when you get one really extreme conspiracy theory, it becomes easy to believe other extreme conspiracy theories.
Yeah, it kind of becomes a slippery slope.
Indeed.
What is the most dangerous? Like, a lot of people, for us who have a QAnon believer in their lives, QAnon feels more sinister than all of the other conspiracy theories. Is there one that stands out to you as the most dangerous?
I think it kind of depends on, you know, what, where you're looking at the danger being. Like, to the individual, I think the most dangerous ones are the ones that involve, like, health and finance. You know, if it's something that people will end up spending a lot of money on, then that's a bad conspiracy theory. Like something like, you know, UFOs, people don't really spend very much money on UFOs. No one believes UFOs are spraying poison on them, so they don't, you know, buy health supplements. But the QAnon and the anti-vaccine stuff has this very significant health component. So that can be very damaging to the individuals. But all kind of the more extreme conspiracy theories have negative effects, and that they can be socially isolating. If you start believing to the extent that you feel like you have to take some kind of action, which usually starts off by trying to persuade other people, that can have a very negative effect. Even if it's just something like you know, disagreements within the family, but it also could be like a work. If people see you talking about 9/11 or chemtrails at work, that's not going to give a very good impression for your boss, assuming your boss doesn't actually believe in that. But then there's the broader sense of harm is what it does to society, and that's obviously exemplified by the January the 6th attacks on the Capitol. And, you know, that was driven by conspiracy theories. It was conspiracy theories about, you know, essentially the election being stolen. But, you know, also the broader QAnon conspiracy theories and Falun Gong, things like that, like just kind of anything that's opposed to the mainstream. So those are very very dangerous, even though, like, some of them don't seem, you know, super extreme, like the election fraud conspiracy theories seem less extreme than chemtrails or blowing up the World Trade Center. But they're very dangerous because they strike right at the heart of the democracy, and because they're almost like a reasonable thing to believe, because it's not, you know, super extreme, then it means that it's very easy for people to justify taking action on them, because they become so convinced that it's true. They think that our democracy is being stolen. We've got to do something about it. It seems very reasonable to them. But then looking at it slightly wider again, any conspiracy theory that's more extreme than, say, the election fraud conspiracy theory is probably going to lead to that person believing in election fraud. Because election fraud isn't a particularly extreme conspiracy theory, if you get someone sucked into, say, flat Earth, you know, completely extreme thing, flat earthers, they're probably going to believe in chemtrails. They're probably going to believe, you know, that the vaccine has microchips, and they're probably going to believe that the election was stolen. So all conspiracy theories have this degree of danger, but some are more directly dangerous than others.
Yeah. Have you heard of anybody who's gotten out of the QAnon rabbit hole? Any success stories?
Not directly. I haven't talked to people directly. I've done that. I mean, you've sure you've seen the various people online who get publicity who have done that. But yeah, I think for everyone that you see online, there's probably hundreds or thousands who have got out of it. It's something of a revolving door, though. You know, you get more people coming into a conspiracy theory as other people are exiting it. But yeah, it's a difficult one. It's a difficult one because it's, you know, I talk about this in my book. The old conspiracy theories were things that were fairly static. They were things that happened in the past, or it was a situation that was ongoing. Like, say, JFK being assassinated by the CIA. You know, JFK was killed in 1963, like a long time ago. And that conspiracy theory is basically just it's just solidified now. There's not a lot you can do about it, and it doesn't change. So someone believes, you know, they've watched Oliver Stone's Boot Movie, or they've read a book, or they've read another book that kind of debunks it, and then they believe it based on that. So they're very static. You know, 9/11 is an old thing. Chemtrails hasn't really changed in its claims over the years. You know, and contrails themselves are exactly the same as they were, like, I believe, like 25 years ago when the theory started. But QAnon is a super dynamic conspiracy theory. It's constantly changing all the time, which means that you can kind of get someone out of QAnon, but they get back in because there's a new QAnon that's coming out. Like, you know, the original stuff, like the storm, when everyone was going to be arrested, Hillary Clinton's under house arrest, none of that was happening, and none of it came true, and none of it looks like it's going to come true. But it just gets folded into a new set of conspiracy beliefs, and they go forward with those, and they either discard the old stuff, or they say, oh, that was some kind of ruse that was necessary, or it was disinformation, and then you can just justify it based on that. But because it's so dynamic, it's what they call self-sealing. Like, you poke a hole in it and the hole gets sealed up, you know, automatically. Like, you get rid of a whole bunch of it and then it just spreads out to fill the void. So it's a very challenging conspiracy theory, as are most of the new conspiracy theories that come up nowadays.
Do you think we'll ever be without people who believe in false conspiracy theories?
I do not think it is possible to get away from conspiracy theories. It's just a natural way of people thinking. I think we can improve the situation. I think we can teach people more about how to judge conspiracy theories. And we can have tools that will identify disinformation in a transparent way, not just something flagging something as disinformation, but providing all the information in a nice open source way and explaining, yeah, how the dots were connected and how you might have been fooled. But I think it's just a natural part of human nature to be suspicious, and it's very understandable that people fall into listening to one particular outlet or another. And that's always going to lead to conspiracy theorists. It's not something that human civilization has ever been without, and we never will be in the future.
You were once on the Joe Rogan podcast, right?
Yeah, three times actually.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, really? I used to be a fan. Like, I used to listen to it pretty avidly.
Yes.
But do you think, like, I've kind of changed my view on it a little bit lately, especially with my parents going down the QAnon rabbit hole. I feel now kind of like he's adding to some of this stuff. Do you feel that way too?
I agree. Yeah. I think he's kind of fallen into a certain way of thinking, which I guess, like, there's various ways. It's kind of, I guess, like Elon Musk type thing. It's kind of a bit right wing, but also kind of a bit laissez-faire, like someone who thinks that the world should be a certain way, and we should do certain things. But he's believing, I think, a lot of the claims and repeating them uncritically. Like, he repeated the claim that a school was installing cat litter in the rooms so that furries would have a place to go to the bathroom. And he said it was true because someone had told him it was true. And so he repeated it. And, you know, he later retracted it. But, you know, the problem is that initial stories are much more interesting than retractions. And so he tends to promote lots of things. Like, he's promoted lots of coronavirus stuff, which is just flat wrong, like saying ivermectin is effective, things like that. It's, you know, it's stuff that someone has told him, and he believed it, and so he repeats it. Now, he's a smart guy, but when you're only getting your information from certain sources, you're going to end up with gaps in your information. He's a big UFO guy, and he believes some of the more ridiculous UFO theories out there. There's a famous UFO guy called Bob Lazar that pretty much everyone thinks is just, you know, full of nonsense, but Joe Rogan believes him just because he likes the theory. It resonates with him. And it's unfortunate, yeah. And I still have a thanks to him in my introduction, because he's partly responsible for the book getting written. in that someone saw me on Joe Rogan and they thought, oh, this guy's on Joe Rogan, let's get him to write a book. But yeah, and he has escaped the rabbit hole to some degree. He used to be more interested in things like chemtrails. Then he saw my website on chemtrails and it helped him like realize that it was nonsense. So he's one of these people who's kind of just shifted up and down the spectrum and perhaps broadened the spectrum a little bit. But now he's in a place, I think, that where he does uncritically repeat disinformation, and it's usually towards the kind of like conspiracies about things like vaccines and the election fraud and woke culture and things like that, which is a bit disappointing.
It is, because I used to really enjoy watching him.
Yeah.
I mean, I got exposed to so many new thinkers and authors by watching that show, but now it just feels like a lot of them are just people who are saying things that have no basis in reality. And yeah, it's disappointing.
It is disappointing. And I'm in two minds. Like I do a lot of UFO debunking and he's into UFOs, so he might invite me back to talk about UFOs. I don't know whether I should go back on, but maybe I can go back on and talk some sense into him.
Yeah,
we'll see.
Do it. So you have a website called Metabunk. It's a website that helps people. It's got a lot of information to debunk a lot of these conspiracy theories. Does that include some from QAnon?
There is the QAnon sub forum. It's not been that active recently. It was more active like a couple of years ago. It's still, things kind of crop up occasionally, but I think people kind of got a bit tired of the QAnon because it is kind of like repeating similar types of things, even though they're new things, but they're not things that are really based with good evidence. And if things don't appear to be making the news, then people don't tend to want to debunk them because it's not really, doesn't seem to be affecting that many people. But I probably should do more. I've been very interested in, like I say, UFOs recently, but the forum covers a wide range of things. There's a lot of resources about chemtrails on there, a lot about 9/11. There are quite a few QAnon things and the stuff about election fraud and a lot about UFOs and all kinds of other things as well. There's thousands and thousands of posts, not the best organized, but there's a lot on there.
Yeah, I've browsed there a couple of times and it's pretty informative. I like it. Definitely a resource for anybody who's looking to debunk their rabbit hole loved ones. So you said you have the second edition of your book coming out and you told me that there's going to be some information on QAnon in there.
Yeah, there's basically four new chapters, one on QAnon, one on the vaccine and coronavirus, one on election fraud, and one on UFOs. And these are just all basically things that came into prominence after I wrote the first edition. Obviously, the QAnon was just in its starting in its ascendance. I hardly mentioned it in the first edition of the book. Now it's got a full chapter on it. And then the election happened afterwards. And then UFOs have been kind of popular. And the pandemic, of course, was the huge event that happened after I wrote the book.
When does that come out?
June the 20th. So just a month from time of recording, approximately.
Cool. I'm
3 weeks.
Very excited to read that. Do you want to tell people where they can find you or they can follow you?
Yeah, they can find me at Metabunk. This is metabunk.org. Or I post a lot on Twitter. I'm at Mick West on Twitter. Or if you want to just email me, you can email me mick@mickwest.com. And I'm always happy to hear from people and give some quick advice if possible. That's my main things are Metabunk and Twitter and YouTube. I have a YouTube channel.
He does answer his emails. I emailed you like 2 years ago when I read your book and I was just in the initial shock of finding out that my parents were down the rabbit hole and you responded and it was nice.
Yeah, that's one of the good things about not selling very many copies of your book is that you don't get too much fan mail or fan emails or questions. So I'm in a good position.
You probably will from some of our listeners.
Oh, I welcome it, sir.
Well, thank you very much for joining us. We really appreciate you taking time out of your day to talk to us. This has been really, really informative.
Thank you. Thank you. It's been a very interesting conversation, and I really appreciate what you're doing with your podcast and helping people via that. And that's a great, great work.
Thank you so much for listening to my chat with Mick West today. I'm going to go ahead and link his book in the show notes so you can grab that. It's a must read, especially if you're an avid listener to this podcast. Also, you'll find links to all of Mick's social spaces down below. And you're going to find a link to the full video of our chat so you can see Mick and I talking to each other on our YouTube channel. And you can get an ad-free version of that as well on our Patreon. And the Patreon is a really, really, really great way to support this podcast if you're looking for a way to support it. And if you're looking for a free way to support it, one of the best things that you can do is rate and review this podcast on Apple Podcasts or any platform that you're listening to us on. Thanks for listening.